This is Mike Wilbon from ESPN's Pardon the Interruption, and I'm speaking with Chad and Ryan on the Friendly Confines podcast.
Rhino, big major league signing this week, probably the biggest one of the offseason. And no, it didn't involve the Cubs.
It did not involve the Cubs, but it certainly could haunt the Cubs, Chad, when they play this team. We're going to be talking about Trevor Bauer and the big money that he is going to be earning, at least for the next 3 years.
And it looks like we've got some clarity on when the season is going to start. We're going to talk about that. And my gosh, Rhino, we've had some great guests, but this interview, such great insights, so much fun.
A lot of fun, Chad. This is somebody who's been on our wish list for a long time, from ESPN, from Pardon the Interruption, from the NBA on ABC and ESPN. It is Michael Wilbon. You know, he's the reason we do the podcast the way that we do, Chad.
Yeah.
It's maybe
yeah.
a little bit of a shout out to PTI, but he was wonderful. We're so excited. This is part one of a two-parter with Michael Wilbon, and it is well worth it. So stick around, because the Friendly Confines starts right now.
Hey, this is Len Casper. You're listening to the Friendly Confines podcast with Chad and Ryan.
First inning, Chad, as we talk about the big offseason story, and that is Trevor Bauer, the, I guess, gold nugget that everybody was wondering where he would end up going. You knew it was going to be dragged out right before spring training, and sure enough, it was. Trevor Bauer officially announcing he is a member of the Los Angeles Dodgers, signing a $100 million plus contract over 3 years. My goodness, no longer in the NL Central. The NL West is going to be absolutely unbelievable this year, Chad. And not only that, the Dodgers look unbeatable. What do you think of this move of Trevor Bauer, now officially a part of that Dodgers rotation?
You've got to imagine the World Series is coming through Southern California, whether it's in LA or it's in San Diego. This just solidifies that. A couple reactions to this, you know, as it's related to the Cubs. One, what's up with like belt tightening and the need to give some flexibility in the payroll because of the uncertainties of COVID? The Mets and the Dodgers, they're not doing that. They're loading up. They want to win. This is just another black eye for the Cubs front office. You know, they keep saying that, you know, we've got to retool. We've got to, you know, worry about re-signing all these guys next year. These other franchises are saying we want to win now. And Trevor Bauer is one of those win now guys. So this is a, you can't be Cubs front office and have any credibility right now with what you're trying to do from a payroll implication when the team that just won the title says, you know what, we want to reload and have an even better rotation with Cy Young winners, future Cy Young winners, Hall of Famers, you know, loading up on the market. The other piece of the puzzle is this is good news for Cubs fans because, you know, Chicago's not going after an ace, but the Cubs definitely need a 4 and a 5. And you would assume that Trevor Bauer is going to kind of set the market in terms of it always goes top down. So now that he's been there, the guys in the next tier are going to fall into place. And then we'll see what scraps are left from the Cubs, but a tremendous contract. I think his 1 year, he'll be the highest paid guy if he opts out after the second year, $42 million for a season of pitching pro baseball. That's incredible, but well-earned. He knows how to market himself.
Unbelievable. And kudos to him and Rachel Luba, his agent, who has just come onto the scene and has really been unbelievable and has really just kind of changed the way that baseball agents and players are kind of negotiating deals. But yeah, $40 million to be paid this year. He's going to be the highest paid player in baseball this year, $45 million in 2022. Unbelievable contract for Trevor Bauer and what he's going to be getting. And to your point about the Cubs, it is kind of sad. I mean, you hit it on the head. Like, this is a team that is a top three market. It's a major market, and it is playing like you're the Kansas City Royals right now. And it's just sad, and it's pathetic to see that the Cubs are not going to be a major force this season. I mean, a lot of things just have to go right this year for this team to even make the postseason, let alone try to make a run in the postseason. So the Dodgers are going to be very extremely tough to beat. Not to say they're not beatable, because listen, anything can happen. But at the end of the day, when you're lining up three Cy Young Award winners in your rotation, plus a guy who could potentially win the Cy Young Award this year, in Walker Buehler, that is just an incredible lineup that you're going to be seeing day in and day out. So it's scary to think what this team's going to look like.
Yeah, I know you're excited to watch more White Sox games. I got to tell you, I'm excited every time the Padres and Dodgers face off. I'm going to be watching that. I mean, both those teams are absolutely loaded. They
want
to win now.
Teams, don't you get both networks? You're able
I can get both networks. I can drive to both parks if they're allowed. But yeah, I can watch both games live. It's going to be good. It's good for baseball. And the fact that the Cubs just decided that they don't want to play right now is so frustrating and bad for baseball. We'll talk about this more as the offseason continues, but let's move on to the second inning. And we had some big news in the last week about Major League Baseball putting a proposal. I'm going to summarize this, basically putting a proposal out to the Players Association saying, let's delay it. Let's do it 154 games. Let's take some extra precautions. We're going to add in the DH universally, blah, blah, blah. The Players Association basically says, no, you're not going to dilute our earnings. You're not going to make more money in an expanded playoff. We'll start on time because there's no reason not to start on time, because the other way would have gotten a lot more power to the commissioner's office to maybe to postpone games or cut games, which would cut into the earnings of the Players Association. This is labor negotiation, thinly veiled as America's pastime. But the headline here, Rhino, is spring training and opening day are set to start on time. What do you think about that? Do you think pitchers and catchers report in a couple weeks? Do you think the first spring training game is a few weeks after that? Do you think everything goes as planned?
Well, I don't think everything will go as planned, Chad, but I certainly think that they are going to open in the next 2 weeks, and we are going to see baseball, and we are going to see as much of a normal regular season as possible. And man, I am so happy about that. I'm happy that the players rejected it for whatever reason it may be. I like having the traditional pitchers hitting and 162 games and, you know, the things that we are accustomed to, especially after what we dealt with last year. This is going to be a welcome sight, and I'm looking forward to it. What about you?
Well, you know, I'm really excited. You know, we've obviously previewed our guest this week, Michael Wilbon from Pardon the Interruption and ESPN. He has some really good takes on some of the changes necessary in baseball in terms of, you know, the seven inning doubleheaders and, you know, the starting the runner on second and the extra innings and the universal DH. I mean, starting it on time in whatever fashion and function, I'm ready for it. I mean, we've talked about this so many times. For me, 2/3 of the year has Pat Hughes in my ear as I'm working during day games, you know, listening to the broadcast and spending time at Wrigley Field. This is, again, not going to be a normal year, but I need baseball. I need baseball to survive. It sounds pretty pathetic, but it's a part of my fabric. I love, no matter how good or how bad the Cubs have been my entire life, it's what has always been on in my ear in front of me. I'm excited to see what the product's going to look like, you know, offensively. The Cubs have the ability to be a powerhouse, you know, and they've got a good defensive team. The pitching is going to struggle. But in terms of starting on time, you know, the other leagues have proven you can do it. The fact that we're looking at Super Bowl weekend right here, and yes, it was very janky. You had some times where games are played on Tuesday morning. You know, you had whole teams that were pulled out. You're seeing that in college basketball where, you know, subs and student athletes, you know, student trainers are filling out the team. NBA, you're having the same situation with postponements and things like that. This is going to be a bit of a mess because it is a 162 game season. But the thing that makes me feel a lot better is you've got things like that one dose vaccine that's out there. That is almost like a magic bullet for the professional sports leagues. And I actually am one of the ones to say, hey, you know, it's a small number that provides a lot of enjoyment for the most of America. I think all professional sports teams should get that vaccine. And I think that'll help things along, but I'm ready for it. I think we're at the time of this recording, we're about 55 days away from opening day at Wrigley. I still have my plane tickets already purchased. I don't expect I'll be able to sit in my seats or even get on that plane, but I'm ready. I'm ready, Rhino.
All right, third inning now, Chad, and the Cubs officially announce their big signings. Chad, we got our own Trevor.
Oh yeah,
his last name is Ed Bauer. It's Williams, who I'm actually intrigued by. He's going to be probably the 4 or 5 starter in this rotation. Jock Peterson officially signs. Andrew Chafin, who's Rod Beck 2.0 for the Cubs, actually was pretty good last season. And then Sergio Alcantara, the Cubs picked up, who was released by the Detroit Tigers, and he is a backup infielder and, you know, can play several positions in the infield. Chad, how pumped are you to officially have these huge signings for the Cubs this season?
I'm not going to lie. I've never lied to the listeners. I mean, you know, people have said,
you've never lied to the listeners?
No, not about my feelings. I mean, I've been very honest. I'll take an optimistic view on hopes, but no, I mean, today was a yawner of a day. I mean, flurry of activities for the Cubs front office with these three signings and the other pickup. Who cares? You know, people have been complaining, why did they get rid of Kyle? Because we all love Kyle. I love Kyle. I want Kyle to succeed. I want him to become Bambino that we thought he was going to be that. Jock Peterson is basically a more affordable Kyle Schwarber. The other guys, I don't know if Trevor Williams is going to break through and be one of the starting pitchers, you know, on this 1 year deal. But obviously the front office thinks there's a chance they can do it. The Cubs are not really well known for, you know, taking prospects or reclamation projects from a starting pitching perspective and doing much with them. They've been doing some good things lately in the bullpen and in the reliever corps. But, you know, you asked me if I was excited. I'm not excited, but it's necessary. I'm going to be more excited when I see what sort of steps. I'm hoping this Trevor Bauer signing is actually going to trigger more opportunities to see who these mid-tier pitchers who are going to come in and round out the Cubs lineup, because that's the scary part, right? Not the scary part, but that's the part that we have unknowns about is how the pitching staff is going to wind up. You know, what's going to happen at second base is still a question mark as well. What about you?
I mean, there's a saying that I say quite often, and it goes like this, Chad. It is what it is. And this is a perfect example of that. We knew going into the season that they weren't going to be spending big money. Jock Peterson is probably going to be the biggest name that is going to be signed this offseason. We know what this team has. Offensively, a lot of things have to go right for this team to really, you know, crank up the bats and get back to what we're used to. And the pitching rotation is still not at a place where I'm comfortable or feel like we know who's going to be pitching. I mean, we basically have what right now that we know for certain, I guess, three starters.
Yep.
If no, that, three. Maybe three. Two. So as far as I'm concerned, this is just one of those things where there's a lot of question marks. There's a lot of things that we still don't know and that we'll probably just have to kind of wait and see once we hit spring training and once we get some games under our belt. And once that happens, then maybe we'll have a better idea of how that's going to go down. And that's ultimately where I stand.
Fun fact,
this whole thing.
And I'm feeling like I love these asides here. I don't normally do this in the show, but you mentioned Rob Beck, and I have to share this. You know, when he came over, and I think it was, 98, the Cubs sent over Mark Guthrie and a player to be named later. That player to be named later, the kid by the name of Cole Liniac, that the Cubs sent over the Red Sox. Cole Liniac lives here in Southern California and plays on my Wednesday night softball league. And the first time I met him on my second at bat, I took him deep to center field. So I can honestly say that I hit a bomb home run off of former Cubs pitching great Cole and Boston Red Sox pitching great Cole Liniac. So how about that?
Wow. Look it up now,
so,
folks.
You know, we're gonna go on and on with these asides as the show goes on. But stay tuned, everybody. Right. Michael Wilbon coming up in the seventh inning. So, Rhino, moving on to the fourth inning, and you posed this question. I pushed back a little bit. You basically said, is this the worst Cubs offseason ever? And I kind of pushed back to say, is this one of the most disappointing offseasons in recent memory? So I'll pose the question to you, Rhino, how you posed it. Is this the worst Cubs offseason ever?
Yes. Yes, it is. And I'll tell you why. In the past, when the Cubs were tanking, you weren't expecting them to make any moves and you weren't expecting them to do anything to better this ball club because they were trying to tank. So those years in 2011 and 12 and 13 and even 14, we knew this team was pretty much garbage. Now, you can go back as a fan, and I remember years, even when they were terrible, you still thought they had the guys in position to win because they had names that you thought, all right, hey, at least they're trying. It didn't work out. I remember the 1991 season when they went out, signed George Bell and Dave Smith and Danny Jackson, and it turned out to be an absolute disaster because they were just all washed up as players. And at least though, going into the season, you were like, wow, hey, maybe they got a shot. I don't feel that way at all. Even in 1992, when one of the worst moves of all time, when the Cubs let Greg Maddux walk to the Braves, and that was the end of that. But at least the Cubs went out and they signed five guys that you're thinking, okay, maybe there's a chance where, all right, we're trying to make moves to make up for the loss of Greg Maddux. But none of that has happened this year, Chad. Basically, it's been losing all these players and not replacing them with anything. So as far as I'm concerned, this is, in my lifetime, the worst offseason I have ever seen for this baseball team. Hands down.
Doesn't even compare with yourself? The worst when you know you're going to have an absolute loser. And this doesn't feel like absolute loser territory. This is a team that won the division last year. They lost Yu Darvish, which is huge. I mean, you lost the guy that without Trevor Bauer, this guy wins the Cy Young, which basically means he was the man in a shortened season. So, you know, I guess what I could say is I look at this team offensively. I touched on this earlier. I look at this team offensively and defensively. They have the people in place that you'll see next year. There's a whole bunch of guys that are going to make a ton of money on the free agent market if they don't get re-signed by the Cubs. So these are guys that are known entities and have the ability to break out and do amazing things. They've struggled with the strikeout. They've struggled with one run production. They've struggled with the unevenness of their offense where it's feast or famine. It's a broken record, the feast or famine. We should just rename the podcast that if they continue on in that path. But no, I'm not disappointed that you know they haven't gone out and signed 28 people and I'm disappointed by what happened with Yu Darvish. I hope I'm right. I hope something in the front office says Yu Darvish had exactly what we thought he would have over the last 18 months. The initial signing was a mistake. He was never going to be the man. You know, if he ends up being the man in San Diego, then it's going to look really bad because the Cubs could have used him as the number one, number two. In terms of bringing on other players, there have been some decent signings, but for the most part, this free agent offseason has been what it's been the last couple of years. So let's see what the Cubs do. They had the opportunity if they wanted to, to bring in Colton Wong at second base. The Brewers got him at a pretty favorable deal. That would have given the Cubs one of the best infields in Major League Baseball. If you put him as a Gold Glover at second base and already Gold Glove defense, you know, that was a miss, I think, potentially. But then again, you look at the Cardinal fans that were happy to see him go because he batted like 220 or 240 last year. So not the worst offseason ever. And I'll go back. Intern Peyton referred to your question, your kind of open-ended question about do we have two starters or three. Number one is Kyle Hendricks. Number two, Zach Davies. Number three, Alec Mills of the no-hitter. Number four, your boy, your man, Albert Alzolay. And then slated on the depth chart, according to Peyton right now, you are correct, Trevor Williams.
Yeah, and I mean, again, that's all true, but so a lot of question marks in there, Chad. And I'd rather know I'm tanking as opposed to going into an offseason when, like you said, won the division, made the postseason.
I don't think they're tanking, Ryan. I don't think they're tanking. I think they think offensive is going to carry them through their pitching deficiencies. They won the division last year.
Yeah.
We haven't even talked again about Arenado. We talked about it last week. Arenado changes the face of this division. But I think the front office really thinks if this Cubs offense can excel, there'll be something to contend with. And if you look at the players up and down, I think they are. I don't know how you can have the lineup you have defensively and offensively and think this is a tanking season. I think it's a prove it season and a show me season.
I never, but remember, I never said they were tanking. I said that this was just a terrible offseason. They did nothing to upgrade a team that won a division. And that I think is more infuriating, especially when you are trying to at least show that you're attempting, quote unquote, to win. But let's move on now. So we'll talk about the fifth inning, Chad. And there was an interesting article on NJ.com, the paper in New Jersey. And I think it's the New Jersey Plain Dealer. And there was an article that suggested the Yankees should potentially go after Javier Baez at the trading deadline and would give up three prospects in their farm system, three guys in their top 20. And if that was available, they should go for it. Now, again, these are just hypotheticals. This isn't like something that's possibly happening. But if Javi is also struggling, again, remember, you got Ed Howard in the minors, Chad. You got somebody that's, you know, up and coming. Would you consider, again, to restock the farm system if the Cubs are not in a place where they potentially should or could be? Would you consider trading Javi Baez to a team like the Yankees and try to get some solid
prospects?
Not going to
name Javi, not going to name Chris. I'm not going to name the players. For me, I appreciate those stories. Those stories are, you know, it's Thursday. What's a provocative thing to write about that people will click on it? That's what I think about those sort of stories. What I'll share with you as your direct question is, would I consider making moves at the deadline if it's very clear that the Cubs are not going anywhere? Absolutely. If you could, now hear me out on this, if you could send Baez over to the Yankees and come back with a haul and maybe have a top 10 or two prospect come back in the mix, and then Baez has the ability to come back and re-sign here. Think about Adrill Chapman. Chapman did that, and the Cubs got a haul from the Yankees got a haul from the Cubs. So that's where I think the front office can say, you know what, this isn't our year, but let's immediately restock, and we can try to bring these guys back. Just because you deal somebody at the deadline doesn't make it a terminal decision. Just because you do that doesn't mean that it's over for that player. But yeah, if it's very clear, if the writing's on the wall that this team is not built for speed, it's not going to happen. I see no reason to make some moves if it gives you the ability to build prospects and build out your farm. You know, the Yankees have largely had some success because of that 16 move with the Chicago Cubs. They've got a bona fide all-star starter in the mix that the Cubs would absolutely love to have back if they hadn't have dealt him. He'd be probably starting second baseman right now. So, you know, I have no problem with that. I'm not naming any names, but yes, make any moves possible. But I'd like to see if this Cubs team can compete.
We've already seen that the way to win in today's game in baseball, it's a lot different back in the day, maybe when we were growing up or when we were in college, where teams would go out and, you know, do kind of a Florida Marlins circa 1997, where they would buy a championship and bring in heavy free agents. That's not the case anymore. We're seeing more and more how farm systems are built, the importance of prospects, kind of like how the NFL is built now, right? Or even the NBA for that matter, how prospects matter so much more today when it comes to building that farm system, having multiple guys at multiple positions to be able to say we have the depth and we can trade once we have those players. Basically what Theo did to build the Cubs 2016 World Series championship. So as far as I'm concerned, if this isn't a team that, as you said, not in contention, not really showing much promise, then I think anybody's on the table, including Chris Bryant, including Javi Baez, anybody that is willing to bring back a haul or solid prospects in return, I'm absolutely going to listen to. So I have no problem with that. But as you said, we'll just
love
have
it
to see.
Move on to the sixth inning, and it's going to be a short one here because we want to get to this fantastic part one interview with Michael Wilbon from ESPN's Pardon the Interruption. Fantastic discussion. We dug deep, not about the current stuff, but just about the real deep stuff with Michael. You're going to love part one and part two next week. But here we are in the sixth inning. We're going to talk about a couple old friends. Dexter Fowler, no longer a Cardinal. Let's be honest, never really felt like he fit in over there with the fan base, because that fan base is just rude. Those guys are jerks. But he is reunited with Joe Maddon in Southern California with the Angels. What do you think about this move?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of those feel-good moves, right? You're bringing back a guy who two people know each other pretty well. So Dexter now with the Angels, probably going to lead off for the Angels with Joe, who he's familiar with, who he has a relationship with. Certainly, listen, I mean, you know, we're partial to the Cubs, but I think we can both agree that it would be great to see Joe succeed in Anaheim. He's got the best player in baseball on his roster. So if the Angels can kind of turn things around, which I have no doubt, I think Joe will be able to do that eventually. I'd like to see it happen. But yeah, again, you know, listen, it's cool to see the two of them back together. They have that relationship and certainly know each other pretty well. And I think it'll be a good opportunity for Dexter Fowler to kind of reinvigorate himself, play for a guy who he knows he can trust and have a comfort level with, and hopefully ultimately bounce back and have a good season.
Well, I'm just going to briefly say yourself? Love Dex. Cubs fans love Dex, you know, and wish him well. It's hilarious that Albert Pujols has basically been an albatross on that Angels team that it may be impossible for them to overcome to actually have some success with the best player in baseball in Trout. But they definitely have a lot of the pieces. It's going to be exciting to see if they can stand out and even if they can get any notoriety with the Padres and the Dodgers doing what they're doing. I mean, Southern California is where you want to be if you want to watch some really good baseball. But here's my point about Dexter Fowler, and this really is in my car. I hate it. It's one of the things when I look back with frustration, consternation, if the front office had just signed Dexter to a 2-year deal after 16, think about all of the issues that would have been resolved there. Starting center fielder, consistency, a leadoff hitter. I think that this team would have been, I think that's one of the misses. There's a few in Theo's reign, but bringing Dexter back after 16 for a couple more years, that could have changed the face of Cubs baseball. I'm excited to see he's there, but I feel like that's one when I see Dex and I go, what could have been.
Time now for the seventh inning stretch here on the Friendly Confines. And Chad, you know, we've always had some great guests that come on with us each and every week. But this is a guest who, you know, Chad, when we talk, this has been one of our dream guests.
Oh, yeah.
And we finally have been able to get him on the program. Of course, you know him as the co-host from Pardon the Interruption with Tony Kornheiser on ESPN, longtime sports columnist with the Washington Post, part of the NBA on ABC and ESPN, and a columnist for The Undefeated as well. You can find him on all the social media pages, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Real Michael Wilbon. It is the Real Michael Wilbon joining us here on the seventh inning stretch. Michael, it is such a pleasure and an honor. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Friendly Confines.
Well, thanks for asking me. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So we have to say you kind of are the genesis for the reason why we do this podcast. To kind of put it in perspective for you, Chad and I, we do 9 topics, which we call innings, and we debate them for about 2 minutes at a time. And then in the seventh inning, we have on an interview. You might be familiar with that format a little bit. So they say copying is the biggest form of flattery. So thank you. We hope we can continue to do it this way and you don't come after us for any copyright infringement.
No rights fees will transfer, I promise you.
Well, let's start here, Mike. Anyone who knows and follows your career knows you are a huge Chicago Cubs fan. I do know the story, but I would love for our listeners who may not know how Michael Wilbon became a Chicago Cubs fan, be it that you grew up on the south side of Chicago, where it's a predominantly White Sox neighborhood. How did that infatuation start for you when you grew up?
Well, you know, there's several parts to it. A lot of people now who are 20 years younger than me, they'll say, well, I saw the games on WGN and I lived in San Antonio, or I lived in Orange County, or whatever it is. Well, I'm old enough to have seen both the White Sox and Cubs on WGN because all their games were on, were both teams were on. And so that wasn't it, although you could see all the Cubs games and you could, you know, that wasn't the case in hardly any other baseball town. But I think the greatest part of it, and I grew up as a little kid watching both teams, and my father, dyed-in-the-wool White Sox fan, he took us to White Sox games. We didn't go to Cubs games as little kids. We went to White Sox games. And I rooted for both teams. I didn't know any better. They didn't play each other. It didn't matter to me. I was rooting for a team with Chicago on its jersey. But when I got to be 10 years old, maybe 9, I started playing Little League in West Chatham Park. And the jerseys on some of those players, my friends, were, they said Ernie Banks Ford on the back of the jersey. So need I tell you who was a co-sponsor for our Little League?
Oh, wow.
And Alderman William Shannon at the time was the other one. And the two of them, as far as I know, and I did some asking around years ago, they were, every park didn't have a Little League. Every park didn't have a Little League even in 1969 when baseball was still king. And baseball very much was king. Not pro football, baseball. in the late 1960s, even the early 1970s. And it turned after that. But when I was 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, I played Little League. Baseball was my first love. And Ernie Banks sponsored my Little League. So, you know, it's not a big jump. It's not a big leap. And Ernie Banks was the biggest star in town, even when the White Sox were a better team in the late 60s when I started really paying attention when I was 7 and 8 years old. The White Sox had a pretty good team. Blew a chance to win the pennant in 1967. I don't remember what happened in 68. The Cubs got better in 68. I think they finished in third place in 67 and 68. That was like triumphant considering where they'd been. And, you know, by 69, obviously, is famous and infamous. But by then, I was, you know, Ernie Banks was my favorite athlete. I guess he had to share that space with Muhammad Ali. And I watched every at-bat I could of Ernie Banks the rest of his career, which was only a few more years. I mean, Ernie was, you know, retiring by, what, 71? So it's only the last 4 years of his career that I clearly remember. I remember a little bit, maybe in the mid-60s. But again, Ernie Banks Ford in blue letters on the back of those uniforms. And, you know, I got to see him in subsequent years as a grown man, as grown men. And I was always like I was a little child approaching him. And he was always unbelievably gracious. And he used to, where he had these memory things he would do. He would do, he had these exercises to work on his memory so that he would not forget anyone or anybody or anything. I need to do that. I should have been doing it 20 years ago. And I saw Ernie Banks at Medina at the PGA Championship. So I guess that must have been 1999, the Sergio Garcia duel. And Ernie Banks is coming into the tent. And another writer said to me, "Oh, there goes your hero. Are you going to say anything to him?" And I go, "Nope, I'm not going to say anything because he doesn't remember me." And so Ernie was sort of shimmying between press tables to get to the other side. And he looks down, and I'm writing at that point, and he says, "Hey, Michael, how you doing?" Wow. And he says, you better get back out to the neighborhood. Talk to the young guys out there sometime. And seriously, I could have fainted and died at that moment. It was like who is somebody in an earpiece? Is somebody in an ISB telling him who I am and where I lived? And you know, this is what he did. He loved making people feel good in that way. And so, but Ernie Banks was my favorite player. There was nothing that was going to make me root against Ernie Banks and Billy Williams and Fergie Jenkins and Ron Santo. And those became, and teams stayed together. And those guys stayed together for years. Go Jim Hickman in there. You know, and Kenny Holtzman and Bill Hans, they stayed together for years. And you got to root for them and see them and felt like you knew them. And the Cubs were my team, and that's the way it stayed. So that's been, what is that, 50-plus years? Yeah.
That's such an amazing and cool story. I know you have so many memories as an adult, of course, going to Wrigley and, you know, seeing them win the World Series. But I'm curious about, as a child, Michael, do you remember going to Wrigley for the first time?
Oh,
you have
yeah.
any memories of
oh,
that
yeah.
And,
yeah.
and what that experience was like for you when you got to walk in a Wrigley yeah. field for the first time as a child?
Life-changing. And I don't mean in ways that people might think I'm talking about. So, again, I said my father's a Southsider and a White Sox fan. And one day I have to be 6 or 7 years old. I came home and Bill Veeck was sitting on our front steps talking to my father. I don't even know how that happened.
Jeez.
I have no idea how that happened. And my father, you know, has been gone for 35 years. I can't go back and revisit it. But we had never been to Wrigley Field. My father, and I've written about this, my father was one of the people who was turned away when he wanted to go and see Jackie Robinson play in Chicago for the first time. So this is sometime in the spring or summer of 1947. My father had been living in Chicago, had come up in the Great Migration from Georgia, had been in Chicago since he was 20, so he'd been there a year and a half maybe. And he wanted to go see Jackie Robinson play. And he was told to they weren't letting him in. And he vowed he would never go to Wrigley Field. Never, ever. He would never return to Wrigley Field. Which I understand much more now than I did when I was 8. But when I was 10, we would ask my father every summer, can we go to Wrigley Field? Can we go see the Cubs? And we would go to the players' people would go to the players' parking lot back then. You could talk to players all day if they had time. But we wanted to go and have this experience and see the Ivy and see it all in person. And you got to understand, I understand Wrigley Field may be 8 miles from Comiskey. Yes, it's still Comiskey to me. 8 miles difference, but it's not 8 miles. It's light years, especially in the 1960s when Chicago was the most segregated city in America. Black people just didn't get on that L and take the train to Wrigley Field. Now, you might have gone somewhere on the north side to work. A lot of people were going to be a domestic. Rogers Park was, there was some integration in Rogers Park at that point. But you didn't just go to Wrigley Field. And not from the south side. And my mother said, okay, she went to my father, and I could overhear them having the discussion. And she said, look, I know this happened. I know that it angered you to your core. It angers me hearing, knowing the story. But you got to take these boys to Wrigley Field. It's been 22 years. You got to take them to Wrigley Field. So my father relented. He said we could go as long as we saw the Atlanta Braves so he could see Hank Aaron play. Ferguson Jenkins pitched against the Braves that day. Henry Aaron hit a home run and the Cubs won. I don't know how you can have a better result than that, but the amazing journey was much greater. I mean, walking to the L to get on it, to go past downtown, to go north of Chicago Avenue, to go to the north side, that was a different existence. That was like going to a different city, like you needed a passport. I jokingly said my mother packed sandwiches, but I don't think that was a joke. I think she did. I then for the rest of my life have taken the train, taken the L to Wrigley Field, sometimes from that very home. And it never struck me until I got older what was going on, how different it was from going to Comiskey. How even when I took my prom date in 1976, God, it seems like it was a lifetime later, it was only 7 years. You know, and she wanted to sit in the bleachers, and I'm like, I don't know if this is good idea to sit in the bleachers. And I was looked at, she was so fair skinned in complexion, I'm not sure people in the bleachers knew what race she was, but I'm brown enough for them to know what I was, and the stares, I will never forget them. It was like I was an alien to be in the bleachers in Wrigley Field in 1976. By the way, I've never sat in the bleachers again. Never. And I've been in Wrigley Field, so that's 45 years ago. I've been in Wrigley Field in 45 years, I don't know, let's say 150 times, maybe more than that, maybe 200 times. Never have I sat in the bleachers. And never will I sit in the bleachers. I guess you can call that scar tissue. But so going to Wrigley Field was a huge, unforgettable deal that impacted my life and views on lots of different stuff.
Michael, I love that story. I appreciate it. This is Chad, and I want to before we pivot to current day Cubs, I'd like to hear your take on current day baseball and forget about COVID and all those different things. What do you think baseball needs to do differently to not only be more inclusive to, I mean, you mentioned early on, you know, baseball was king, football's now king, right? In certain parts of communities, basketball is king. This is a time when baseball, I feel like, is potentially at a cliff where if they don't make the right decisions, they're going to alienate a lot of people. What do you think if you were commissioner for a day, what would you do differently?
Man, we better start another podcast. We better start another session. Because that would take a long time. This baseball is the only sport where I think of it in just the way you pose the question. Because I don't think of basketball and football that way. There's sports that have made big changes along the way. Baseball, for the longest, made seemingly none. It's like the line of demarcation is the adoption of the DH. What was that, 1972 or 3? For the American League, there's so many things. And yet there are things I don't want to touch. Yet, you know, Tony screams at me that I'm a purist. I'm not a purist. There's some changes I could take. I don't want to see seven-inning doubleheaders. I don't want to see that. I don't really want to see guys on second base to start extra innings, but I'll take it because the games are too long. I would figure out a way to shorten games to – I mean, you know, Joe DiMaggio said he never played a game that lasted longer than 2 hours in his entire career. So games should not last longer than 2.5 hours. When I was a kid, games lasted 2.5. I know because I went to, I would leave St. Ignatius and get on the train and go to Wrigley Field, and first pitch was 1:25, and by 4:30, I was at home. Yeah. I had taken the train home, and I didn't leave in the sixth inning. I watched the whole game. I was home 3 hours later on the south side, which means the games are taking 2:05, 2:10, 2:25, or maybe 2:30. But now games are interminable. It's ridiculous. I would do something to shorten games. If that meant putting a clock on people, fine. I hate the notion of clock. I would do that, first of all, but all of this has to be governed by labor peace. And baseball ownership and labor, they're just too ornery with each other to get it. And they don't care enough. They don't. They don't care enough because we see the labor stoppages. We see the work stoppages. We see it every few years. We see they come back the very next round of negotiations and don't give a damn. And I understand, and unlike other people, like yesterday, I just said this on PTI, when Tony said, you know, he talked about players having leverage and wanting to use it all. And I said, Tony, this comes after 100 years of the owners having all the leverage and using it all. All I have to do is say reserve clause. So I am not easily swayed by either side. I just know both sides are foolish. They've hurt the game as much as they've helped it. I understand. I'm the son of a Teamsters union member and a Chicago teachers union member. So I understand togetherness in labor. I get it. But baseball is not helped anymore by sort of this hammering of each other to where a season can be missed like this one. Hockey finally got its act together after missing one, so maybe baseball has to have one too. The NHL actually benefited from it in the long term. But I don't know. I don't, you know, so there's rules. Like, would I have a DH? I think I would leave the DH in the American League and not have it in the National. I like the difference between the two. I don't care about any sort of forced uniformity. But you'd have to – by the way, I agree with – another rules change I agree with – you can't come in and pitch and throw one pitch to one, or pitch to one batter, because it's one of the things that lengthens the games. Stepping out of the batter's box, not allowed. One of the things that lengthens the games. So there are things like that. The time of the game is a major thing to me because it drives away viewers. It drives away participants.
And our thanks to Michael Wilbon. What an awesome, awesome guy, and a great interview. That was so nice of him to spend some time with us. And again, that was just part one, Chad. You can listen to part two in our episode next week. We get into some interesting topics, including Black History Month. And we also speak about what he thinks the Cubs are doing this offseason and what his reaction is to the Cubs this offseason. And a big debate that Chad and I always have is it okay to root for the White Sox this offseason? Mike has some interesting thoughts on that as well. So stay tuned for next week. There's more with Michael Wilbon, and we certainly encourage you to check that out when we release that episode as well.
So much fun. Enjoyed the interview. Marv Levy, Wayne Mesmer, and Michael Wilbon. That's a quite a 1-2-3 in just our last couple of episodes. So much fun. So let's move on to the eighth inning, and it poses the question, Rhino, especially as the NL West now looks to be the powerhouse, and you look at the moves that are happening in different divisions in baseball. And if you take the Arenado situation out, you know, the NL Central was the least active season, or the least active division in baseball. What do you think? I mean, is the NL is this the worst division in baseball right now, the NL Central?
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard to say when you're looking at overall the, you know, the baseball standings of who's pretty bad. Believe it or not, Chad, I know this may sound crazy, but I think the answer is yes, but you know who comes into a close second is the AL Central as well. But I do think that at the end of the day, when you're looking at a team where the Cardinals are the overwhelming favorite, and really there's no one else in that division that I think can really touch them. I mean, between the Brewers and the Pirates, who are in massive rebuild, the Reds, who I don't think the Reds are going to be as bad as everybody thinks, and same with the Brewers, but I certainly don't think they're going to be making the postseason. Yes, the NL Central, Chad, is going to be a laughing stock, other than the Cardinals, The Cardinals, I think, are going to pretty much dominate that division. I certainly think it's going to be a runaway for them, and it's not really a contest as far as I'm concerned. What about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the what they're doing with what the Mets are doing in the East. You look at what the Braves are already have done. The excitement around the Marlins. I mean, I'm excited about the NL East. I think they're a strong division. The NL West, I'm excited about. The AL East, I'm excited about. The AL Central, you know, had three playoff teams last year. The Central League, the division in the National League is absolutely, without a doubt, the yawner of Major League Baseball right now. So it could mean that there is a lot of, the balance of the competition could be strong, even though the Pirates have made some moves. It makes it look like they're not looking to compete. The Reds have obviously unloaded a lot of talent. The Brewers, I'm not big believers in them. And they've just gotten older, and Christian Yelich has to figure things out at the bat. It comes down to Cardinals and Cubs in this coming year. And I just can't imagine a situation in a scenario where the National League Central is leading anything in the coming year. All of the other divisions have already kind of reached the echelon, and now they're ready to compete, or they've made some really interesting moves in this offseason that said basically they want to win it all.
All right. I do. Yeah. And I still say that the Cubs right now, in my opinion, are the fourth best team in the NL Central. I really, truly believe that.
I just don't see that. I think it's a 1-2 race between them and the Cardinals, but we got to play the games, right?
We got to play the games. So let's finish up. Speaking of games, Chad, in the ninth inning, and it was an interesting note. When we talked to Michael Wilbon, we asked him about his first Cubs game and what that experience was like for him. And man, was that a cool game that he got to go to. Braves, wow. Cubs, Fergie Jenkins on the mound. And Hank Aaron hit a home run, and the Cubs won the game. I mean, does it get any better than that? So, Chad, I'd love for you to tell me about your first Cubs game. I don't think we've ever talked about this before, but what was your first Cubs game? How old were you, if you can remember? Where was it? Do you remember who they played, what the score was? Give us the details, if you can remember. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely can remember it. It's one of my favorite stories that I've recounted. I guess I've never really told you about this, but I had just turned 16, and I lived, as you know, in downstate. I lived not even downstate. I lived in like the country. I lived south of Champaign in East Central Illinois. And I remember driving to the grocery store and seeing my Uncle John, who was a big part of my Cubs fandom. And he was coming out of the grocery store. He sees me driving. He goes, "Oh, you're driving now?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And he goes, "Well, when are you going to go up and see those scrubs?" Now, he would lovingly call them the Scrubs, even though he was a Cubs fan. One of the more pessimistic Cubs fans I know, but I love him to death. And I said, "What do you mean? When am I going to go up and see him?" "Well, you can drive now. Why don't you go up there?" And it never occurred to me, being from the country, being from East Central Illinois, where my parents hated. They're fearful of driving in Chicago. Anything with more than two lanes of an interstate, they were terrified of. Never occurred to me that I could just drive to a Cubs game. And so I'm like, I can do that. He goes, "Yeah, it's super easy. You just get on 57, then get on the damn Ryan, and then get off on Addison. You're right there." And I'm like, "Hold on a second." I remember I had my checkbook register in my hand, and I'm writing on the back of it, "Rhino, 57, damn Ryan." So I'm imagine 16-year-old kid in Chicago for the first time driving, looking for a sign saying the damn Ryan. And then he goes, "Then Addison." Right. And so, I mean, boom, boom, boom. And I found my way, and I parked somewhere in somebody's yard and paid him $20. And it was a Friday afternoon game. And they were playing the Astros, and it was turned out to be a blowout. And the Cubs didn't do very well. And we moved from the cheapest seats I could afford for me and my girlfriend at the time to going up against the ledge, kind of like the opposite side of where the Bartman seats, but on the right, you know, the right field line. I don't even remember the section number, but, you know, sitting over there, and I was just taking it all in and excited. The Cubs didn't win, but got in the car and headed home, and I felt invincible that day. Like, oh my God, the whole world's at my fingertips now. And that was the first of, I would probably say, thousands of Cubs games. I would say thousands, but hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Cubs games from that moment forward. But how about you?
So this would have been 1991, I suppose. Yes.
1990.
Okay. Mine is, and I just pulled up the box score, but I remember the game. It was June 29th, 1986. Cubs Mets. I remember my father and I went with our synagogue, And we sat in the second to last row of Wrigley, Chad. Now, mind you, I'm 11 years old, and this is the first time I'm at Wrigley. I'd gone to plenty of White Sox games, actually, as a kid, because my family growing up, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but my family growing up were all White Sox fans. So they would always take me to White Sox games. But this was the first Cubs game I got to go to, and I kind of started becoming a Cubs fan when I was around 9 years old. And I remember sitting in the second to last row, Chad, and I remember saying to myself, as long as I live, I will never allow myself to sit in these seats ever again. I will always make sure to go and sit as close as possible. And I've done that ever since. And obviously you've been, you know, very helpful in that way as well. But the final score was 7-4. It was Rick Sutcliffe versus Dwight Gooden. Gooden pitched a complete game. And Daryl Strawberry and George Foster hit home runs for the Mets that day. And this is peak Mets, mind you. This is the year the Mets won the World Series. Yeah. So that was my first Cubs game. Not a bad one to go to. Certainly it would have been cool if the Cubs won. But that was the first time I ever had been to Wrigley Field. And like yourself, you know, been to countless more. But yeah, I will always remember my first Cubs. I can kind of remember my first baseball game, which was a White Sox game, but I don't remember the score or anything like that. But that Cubs game, I vividly remember. So yeah, 1986, June 29th, Cubs Mets. Pretty interesting stuff.
So much fun. Love the stories, Rhino. And I cannot wait for part two of our discussion next week with Michael Wilbon. So much fun.
Absolutely is. And once again, thank you to Michael Wilbon. We appreciate it. And we should also mention, you can find Chad and I on social media. Go to our Twitter handles. I am at Ryan D. Lieber. Chad is at the Chad Gordon. Make sure to check out the Facebook page. It's the Chicago Cubs Friendly Confines Facebook page. We're always interested in interacting with you, the listener. So for Chad, I am Ryan. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. Have a good one.
See you at the ballpark.
Don't let anyone say it's just a game, for I've seen other teams and it's never the same. When you're born in Chicago, you're blessed and you're healed. The first time you walk into Wrigley Field, our heroes wear.
Hi, it's Wayne Mesmer. You're listening to Chad and Ryan on the Friendly Confines podcast.
Hey everyone, I'm Chad Gordon.
And I'm Ryan Lieber. We're the hosts of the Friendly Confines podcast.
Each week, we'll bring you the latest Cubs news from the fans' perspective with some of the biggest names in sports.
Joe Buck, welcome to the Friendly Confines with Chad and Ryan.
Yeah, oh my God, I'm happy to do it.
Pat Hughes, welcome to the seventh inning.
Happy to be here, Chad.
It is Len Kasper.
You got it, Ryan. Chad, happy to be with you guys.
The Hawk, Andre Dawson.
What a smart, distinct pleasure. I'm doing fine, thank you.
We're also excited to bring you new episodes as part of the Barroom Network.
So if you're a Cubs fan or even just a baseball fan,
be sure to check out the Friendly Confines podcast every week on the Barroom Network.
I'm George Will, and you're listening to the Friendly Confines podcast with Chad and Ryan.